You are listening to the Think Radio Network. It's 9 p.m. Eastern United States time, 2 hours Universal time. Up next, World Microscope with Michael Kenney. We hope you'll stay tuned. evening and welcome to World Microscope. I'm your host, Michael Ketter. Today is Tuesday, November the 30th, 2004, and we begin our study of security in just a few moments. But first, a look at today's international headlines. From Kiev in the Ukraine, President Leonid D. Kukma yesterday proposed holding a new election to end the political crisis threatening to tear the country apart, while Ukraine's Supreme Court heard complaints of electoral fraud over last week's presidential election. Kukma's remarks represented the collapse of what had been a united government position that Prime Minister Viktor F. Yankovic won the November 21st presidential election, despite evidence of fraud and falsification involving perhaps millions of ballots. From Washington, the International Committee of the Red Cross has charged in confidential reports to the United States government that the American military has intentionally used psychological and sometimes physical coercion, tantamount to torture, on prisoners at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. The finding that the handling of prisoners detained and interrogated at Guantanamo amounted to torture came after a visit by a Red Cross inspection team that spent most of June in Guantanamo. The team of humanitarian workers, which included experienced medical personnel, also asserted that some doctor and other medical workers at Guantanamo were participating in planning for interrogations, in what the report called a flagrant violation of medical ethics. From Elista, Russia, the Dalai Lama arrived yesterday on his first visit to Russia after Moscow abruptly reversed its refusal to grant the Tibetan spiritual leader entry. Russia has rejected visa requests for the Dalai Lama at least three times in the past because it was wary of upsetting China. The foreign ministry said the Dalai Lama was given a visa in the expectation he would limit his activities in Russia solely to pastoral purposes, visiting largely Buddhist communities in Kalmykia, about 1,000 miles southeast of Moscow. Half of the region's 300,000 residents are Buddhists. Russia is home to a total of about 1 million Buddhists. From Yangon, Myanmar, detained pro-democracy leader Aung San Suu Kyi has been told she will be held under house arrest at least until September, a spokesman for her political party said yesterday. National League for Democracy spokesman Yu Lwin said the party confirmed over the weekend that Suu Kyi had been told her detention would be extended. The news came the same day the state-run press reported that more than 9,000 prisoners, including a small number of political prisoners, had been freed, completing releases recently promised by the military government. From El Fasher, Sudan, the government of Sudan has ordered the country directors of two British-based aid agencies that provide relief to displaced people in the Darfur region to leave the country, accusing them of statements that the government says suggests support for rebels. The directors were ordered out barely 3 weeks after Sudanese authorities and their rebel enemies signed an agreement promising to expand access for aid efforts in Darfur, in western Sudan. Late last night, the government said it would postpone the decision, citing administrative difficulties and humanitarian grounds, Reuters reported. One of the groups, Oxfam Great Britain, which focuses on providing clean water and sanitation in displaced people's camps across Darfur, had said yesterday that it was seeking clarification of the government's orders. The other group, Save the Children UK, whose work includes distributing soap and blankets to families fleeing war in Darfur, confirmed the expulsion notice on its website. From Paris, Nicolas Sarkozy resigned as finance minister yesterday, a day after accepting the leadership of France's Conservative Party, and effectively becoming a rival to his old boss, President Jacques Chirac. The 49-year-old Sarkozy took over Sunday as head of the Union for a Popular Movement, the party that Chirac founded, telling cheering supporters that things are going to change. He could prove a formidable challenger from within France's conservative movement to the 72-year-old Chirac, should the president seek a third term in 2007. From Amman, Jordan, Jordan's Prince Hamza said yesterday he was conceding to the wish of King Abdullah II to strip him of his crown as heir to the throne. Abdullah had chosen Hamza, now a 24-year-old American college student, as heir apparent to the throne, hours after their father, King Hussein, died of cancer in February 1999. I obey the command of my elder brother out of my loyalty, love, and obedience, Hamza told Abdullah yesterday. Our thought for today comes from Oscar Wilde, 1854 to 1900. A man cannot be too careful in the choice of his enemies. And those are the international headlines on World Microscope. This is Michael Ketter reporting.
More coffee, Marge? Thanks, Gloria. Gee, your enclave is a lot more ethnically clean than mine.
Thanks.
You know, I tried something new.
Really?
Yes. New Ultra Serb. For powerful ethnic cleansing, nothing else even comes close.
Serb?
Mm-hmm. But that's been around for years.
I know. But it's been reformulated for extra cleaning power. Not even the UN can stand up to the wallop in just a townful.
Think I ought to try Ultra Serb for my tough ethnic cleansing problems?
When you put the concentrated rifle power of Ultra Serb up against anything else, it's no contest.
I think I will have more coffee, Gloria.
Ultra Serb. For real ethnic cleansing. Anything else is a washout.
Ah, yes. Special thanks to Harry Shearer for that wonderful little tidbit there. Good evening. Tonight, we're going to be discussing security on many, many levels. It's an overview of security as a function, and we'll be discussing more about that later. Well, I just can't get that little jingle out of my head. Ultra Serb. Anything less is just a washout. If you would like to contact this show this evening, we would encourage it. All up and down the Think Radio Network and across North and South America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet. The email address is think@worldmicroscope.com. think@worldmicroscope.com. If you'd like to send a QSL request, you can send it via the post. World Microscope, care of the Think Radio Network, 230 Homestead Street, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 15218, in the United States of America. Once again, that's World Microscope, care of the Think Radio Network, 230 Homestead Street, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 15218. And we'll be taking your phone calls at 412-371-5054, coming up just a few moments. Got a break to take care of and a few other things up and down the line. You are listening to World Microscope along the Think Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Radio Shack unwrap a magical Dish TV deal just in time for the holidays. Sign up for Dish Network and America's top 120 programming package and receive a $50 cashback rebate by mail from Toon Disney. Plus, get a $25 Radio Shack gift card by mail. That's a $75 value only at Radio Shack. Valid with credit approval for new first-time residential Dish Network customers who subscribe to at least 2 months of qualifying programming by December 31st. Prices, packages, and programming subject to change without notice. Details in store.
Cleaning, chopping, slicing, dicing, decorating, wrapping, mixing, roasting, baking, frosting, setting the table, greeting, carving, serving, stuffing, clearing the table. After all that hustle and bustle, slow down with friends and family around the holiday table this year. Serve them warm, nutty Maxwell House hazelnut or bold Maxwell House French roast, both special enough to make wonderful moments with loved ones last. Try Maxwell House hazelnut and Maxwell House French roast with the exclusive fresh seal. Two great ways to make this holiday season good to the last drop.
There are angels in this world. Angels who help feed the hungry ones, save the lonely from despair, and help the lost find their way. They work quietly. And when they're done, they don't fly away. They walk. Thank you for giving to the Salvation Army. You're an angel.
Donate online at SalvationArmyUSA.org or call your local Salvation Army.
And that is something I can heartily recommend. Remember, this is the season of charity, and when you see the Salvation Army representative, do your part. It's not much to ask, and in many places, they're not allowed to ring the bell anymore. In fact, most of the chain stores have chased them out entirely, and the Salvation Army is doing the work that many of us really, you know, perhaps should be doing ourselves, but are not. And the people who receive their benefits will be, well, greatly appreciative of anything that you can do. We're back on World Microscope on the Think Radio Network. My name is Michael Ketter, and tonight we are doing an overview of security as a function, because certainly in the news, security has been a major, major issue. Today, in particular, the Intelligence Department has been hashing through the revamping of what actually intelligence will mean in the United States of America. And Tom Ridge announced also today that he will be stepping down February 2nd, which means there will be a new Director of Homeland Security. So, in order to understand the larger picture of security, let's think of it so that we can approach it from a thinking man's perspective, from a classroom perspective. First of all, as far as security goes, there are two aspects to it that are universal. There are offensive aspects of security, and there are defensive aspects of security. All that and more, actually. It's a big Venn diagram. You have to, in fact, if you've got a piece of paper and a pencil, you might want to jot some of this down. Because, actually, in reasoning this through, you may find you'll reach a different conclusion than what you might have thought at the beginning of this discussion. So, we start with a basic concept. Security can be offensive or it can be defensive. Now, in a larger sense, there's personal security. You know, things that involve the family, yourself, you know, things that have to do with the individual and their life and security in regards to that. Things might involve, for instance, Second Amendment rights. It might involve, let's say, education. It might involve simple things, locks on doors. Now, there's national level security, and that can be interpreted on many levels. What the nation does offensively or defensively to profile themselves in the world so that, you know, we can function and grow and maintain our space without being bullied, so to speak. And then there's global. So you have three different ways of looking at this: the personal, the national, and the global. Now, on a global level, you have to think of, well, what does global security mean? Well, here's two very good, quick examples. If somebody, let's say China, for instance, decides that they're going to do something very, very aggressive, let's say the equivalent of the Second World War starts happening across Asia, and that they take the role that the United States did, and they go in with a bunch of others, what they're calling their allies, to set things straight, and that because things get out of hand, it turns to atomic warfare, and then there's a bunch of nuclear warheads going off, and consequently, there's an issue to be dealt with in the rest of the world. That's something that threatens things globally. Another example might be the obvious one, global warming. And the reason why that would be a security issue is because, well, let's say if the polar caps melt slightly and they displace a certain amount of water, you know, when they're frozen and when they stay the way they are, where they are, they function in two ways. They help to maintain the level of the oceans and to keep our shorelines and our tides with the highs and lows that we're accustomed to. And also, they make the planet have the peculiar tilt that it has right now, where it wobbles slightly and we get variations in season and we get all the different things that have to do with the things we reap the benefits from as human beings. So, if you think of this on that level, you know, those are real threats. Those are tangible things. If the ice caps melt, for instance, and the Earth goes off its axis slightly and the oceans rise, well, that's havoc. You know, what can you do about that? Well, perhaps there's not a whole lot. You know, the controlling of greenhouse gases is one thing, but we're also seeing a natural trend. Again, science kicks in and gives you a little bit of information where if you look at certain, let's say, lava deposits on the bottom of the ocean, where there are still open volcanoes that bubble into the bottom of the ocean, you'll find that they change in magnetic content as they go through. You know, you look at these things as though they bubble out over many thousands of years, and you see that it changes polarity in the magnetic field in the lava. And that shows, well, at this point, the Earth did something. At this point, the Earth did something. So you see, these are examples of global security threats. National security threats are a whole different thing. National security threats are touchy, because anymore, when it comes in the United States to things like the Patriot Act, that's going to cross a lot of boundaries into what we currently call civil rights and what we know as being First Amendment rights in this country, the freedom of expression. All the basic tenets of the United States are questioned when we start to talk about national security. And consequently, we will be talking an awful lot about that. And when you think of any of these, you have to remember there's, within those categories, let's say, three basic divisions in that. See, this allows us to frame this so that when we talk, we'll be able to say, well, hey, this is how I feel about this, and this is why. You see, you're not used to that, are you? You see, this is going to be something where you will have to think, and so I'm counting on you for that. Within each of these three categories, personal and national and global, there are acts of humanity. There are the things we bring upon ourselves. There are acts of industry, or let's say consequences of industry, not necessarily foreseen, or foreseen, but that's a whole reason unto itself. And then there are acts of nature, things like hurricanes, earthquakes, polar caps melting, things like that. So let's review real quick here, and then let's get to some phone calls, since you have your piece of paper out. If we're looking at security through an overview, from a real analysis, and again, reiterate this. A number of people weren't quite clear on what the purpose of this show is and how my own politics figure into it. I will straighten that out right now. I am a liberal, and I am also a real intellectual, a real thinker. And I really do feel very strongly about many different things. But what I'm interested in are answers. And answers aren't going to follow partisan lines. Answers aren't necessarily going to follow political lines, or even rational lines or logical lines. Answers often find themselves in the most unexpected places, and I think that's what this show is mostly about. Write down this number, 412-371-5054. Do you have that written down? That's good. Now, the reason it's not an 800 number is to allow people from outside the country to call in without paying a penalty, and to allow me to not have to pay for your phone calls, because I want you to be reasoned when you call. Some people emailed and said they were actually a little intimidated that I had rules. Oh, and again, these rules are very simple. No hating. No hating. No reason to call people vermin. You can make your point without doing that. Number two, limit your call to once per show and about 3 minutes or less, because we have to make a lot of points here. And let's make sure we're doing that. And here we go. Let's see if I have this patched through. Good evening. You're on World Microscope.
Hi. Are you ready to take phone calls?
Yeah. In fact, that'd be fine. How about you?
Good. This is Tim Hendel in Huntsville, Alabama.
Very good.
Regarding security, I have something else to think about. Who is it that tells most of us whether or not we are secure? Is it George Bush? Is it Fox News? Is it Pacifica Radio? Who says we are secure or we're not secure and we have to do this, that, or the other thing? I have my own opinion about that, but I just want to throw the question out.
Well, while I have you on the line, what is your opinion about that?
My opinion is that this is a total fraud perpetrated by George Bush and the Republican Party. All this stuff about how the Republicans won the election with their brand of morality, abortion, gay marriage, whatever, I think is untrue. I think they won by a three-year concerted campaign to frighten the American people. Not that 9/11 wasn't a terrible thing as it was, although, interestingly enough, none of those people came from Iraq. But I think since 9/11, the Republican Party has been engaged in a campaign of scaring the American people by telling us over and over and over again that we are vulnerable, that we're going to be attacked if George Bush or Tom Ridge or John Ashcroft doesn't do the right thing. And I think that's how they won the election. So in that area, I ask the question, who tells us whether we're... I, for example, was not touched in any way by 9/11 because I'm in Alabama. Now, I feel sorry for the people who were touched, but who tells me whether or not I'm secure? How do I obtain this information as to whether I'm threatened or not? That's the question, and I've told you who I think tells us. So that's my thought.
Now, where do you get your news from?
I get my news from National Public Radio. I get it from the BBC and some of the other shortwave stations. I don't listen to domestic news other than NPR, and I don't watch TV, and I don't get news off the Internet.
Do you feel you are getting a fair shake of the news doing that?
On a scale of 1 to 10, I give it about a 7. I feel that even NPR runs these propaganda pieces under the guise of the families of soldiers who were killed. And again, I feel sorry for those families. But under that guise, they run these pieces that bias us in favor of this war. BBC and such, maybe 8 out of 10. As far as... Now, I used to also listen to Radio for Peace International, and I am an advisory board member of Radio for Peace. You probably know they're off shortwave at the moment.
That's right, yeah.
And I don't have the facility to hear them on the Internet. So I try to get my news from a variety of sources, but I pretty much don't bother with ABC, CBS, and NBC on either the radio or television. Not that I feel they're biased so much as they are simplistic and sensationalist.
Concerned in selling things for Christmas as opposed to bringing you the news.
And believing that the 30-second micro docudrama with someone screaming or crying or yelling or cursing is more valuable than a 2 or 3 minute discussion of an issue.
Well, those are very, very good observations, Tim. And, well, keep listening. And remember, as we go along, we may find some things we're going to be surprised with. You and I sound like we have rather similar tastes. Before I had to gather news professionally, exactly what you do is what I used to do, listen to the BBC, NPR, things like that. Well, thank you very much for listening and calling in.
I shall continue to listen.
Very good. Take care.
Bye-bye.
We're coming up on the bottom of the hour here on the Think Radio Network. We'll be back in just a few moments and take a few more of your calls. You're listening to World Microscope. Stay tuned.
WBCQ, Monticello, Maine, the United States of America.
The techno. Are you opening yourself up to spam? A recent study tried to determine which internet service providers get the most spam. If you have an AOL or MSN email address, you're at the top of the list. How can you cut down on spam when signing up for an email account? According to Consumer Reports, pick an email address that isn't easy to guess. Simple email addresses get more spam. However, ones with letters and numbers get less. With web filtering software, you can censor websites for kids. But for parents who just want to spy on their children, a new piece of software is available called PC Tattletale. Install the software on your computer and it records all the websites visited, their instant message conversations, and emails they sent. PC Tattletale also records what applications they used and takes screen snapshots. Spying on your family members always instills a lot of trust. PC Tattletale will run you $50. For more, go to download.com. I'm Laszlo. That's what's on my underground hard drive.
Mom, Dad,
someone's going to try and get me to take drugs.
Want to do something about it?
You're going to have to make me tell you where I am and who I'm with every day. Don't like the sound of that?
So, you got to be the grown-up.
Kids with involved parents are less likely to try drugs. So ask them, who, what, where, when? Questions. They're the anti-drug. Call 1-800-788-2800 for more information. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
And we're back, up and down the Think Radio Network. On the shortwave giant, WBCQ, Monticello, Maine, the United States of America, and on your computer at www.wbcq.com, www.radionewyorkinternational.com, and also information, the show archive, the daily blog, and so much more available at www.worldmicroscope.com. I'm your host, Michael Ketter. Welcome back. The telephone number here is 412-371-5054. Tonight, we're talking about an overview of security as a function, understanding what security is so that we can protect ourselves in ways that actually matter. Now, Tim brought up a very interesting point, an extremely valid point. How do we know when or when not that we are safe? When is it cool to go outside? When is the all-clear siren actually going to go off and we can go on about our business? Now, that hasn't happened since September 11th, and that's a very interesting thing. The various levels of alert status, let's start with that. The Department of Homeland Security, Department of Homeland Insecurity, depending on your point of view, created a system that would allow us to quickly assess how safe we are. Now, that's kind of like a speedometer that has speeds below zero and speeds that if you go that fast, you'll die, and that right now you're going at that speed that's valid, something like, 100 miles an hour. It makes no sense to have something that constantly stays at yellow or that is not based on real information that the average person can comprehend. Now, if you look at network news, if you look at broadcast television, you'll see the lever at work. When you talk about, let's say, what's the motivation for a network to actually make a decision about what is or is not news? It has a lot to do with money. And money is a very big lever, and when these corporations exceed the boundaries of the United States, or let's say cross state lines, something that is universal on a much larger level, like media has become or is becoming as we speak, then it doesn't matter so much in each one of these places what is or is not marketable or news. It's no longer relevant on that level. So are we safe or are we not? The constant hyping of us being, let's say, now here's some, well, actually, first of all, so that there is a certain amount of background in this, I was one of the people touched by 9/11. I was one of the people who lost a very close friend and actually a number of his cohorts. That's it's something that makes me very sad, but I've learned to deal with it, and I've learned to put it in perspective. Now, if you take the people that died at the Pentagon and the people that died in New York City in the World Trade Center, and if you combine those numbers, and if you also combine with that the number of all of our soldiers lost in Afghanistan and Iraq, that wouldn't even come close to the number of people that we've killed in Iraq. And as Tim pointed out in the call before, Iraq had nothing to do with this. No matter how much you want to tie these things together, whether or not you're talking Republican or Democrat, whether or not you're talking white, black, up, down, left, right, there are certain things that you can actually learn from here. Iraq had nothing to do with this. It was actually Saudi Arabia, people with Saudi citizenship. And when it comes to places like, let's say, Iran, Iraq, Syria, Turkey, well, yes, they do harbor people that potentially could hurt the United States of America, but so does the rest of the world. Again, what is actually secure and what is not? If you think about, let's say, the borders between the United States and Canada and the United States and Mexico, really what we're talking about is a continent. We need to protect the continent of North America. It makes little sense to worry whether or not we can defend the United States if we cannot defend Canada. And it makes little sense to worry if we could not defend the United States if we couldn't defend Mexico as well. It's basically one big chunk. This is a logistic thing. Now, again, there is the offense and the defense of security. There are the acts of humanity, the acts of industry, the acts of nature. It's on a personal, national, or global level. Now, how much television do you watch? That's one of the things that really starts to come into play. If you spend a lot of time watching television, or if you have, let's say, a group of favorites that you like, let's say a news program you're always listening to, you will be pleased to feel that you are comfortable knowing what you're supposed to know. If you are, as Bill Cooper used to say, sheeple, you really look for someone to tell you so that you can feel secure. And that's one of those funny things. What is the motivation? See, more than what is the source of us knowing whether or not we're secure, because ultimately that has to come from us. See, that's the answer, Tim. And I think you knew that when you made the call, and I think it's something that the audience has realized now. How do we know whether or not we're secure? Well, we should know it. From the point that we were born through now, how many times have people gone house to house in the United States of America and blown in the doors and shot and killed people and destroyed things? Well, that happened in the Civil War. Even though there were rules of engagement and things, that happened in the Civil War. But not since then in the United States of America. When we were bombed at Pearl Harbor, that was just a big old airstrike. That was conventional war, like people dropping bombs and declaring war. When you look at something like, let's say, well, look what happened in Fallujah. We basically pushed out all the insurgents that were there. And it is estimated that about two-thirds to three-quarters of those insurgents left. Now, we destroyed the city, house to house. Real mean-ass combat. Serious combat. Now, we don't experience that here in the United States. That's not really even a remote possibility at this point. So, when we think about what could happen to us, let's say if someone sneaks in a bomb and tries to do something like that. Let's say if someone flies a plane into a building. The damage is somewhat limited. It's more of a statement than it is physical damage. And imagine, this is me saying this, someone who is personally touched by this. So, let's review here. Security only really can be determined by the individual. I mean, you can lock your car, but it's easy enough to smash the windows, right? You know, you can just do that if you wait. You can lock your house, but somebody can just lift it up and go underneath, you know. When it comes right down to it, if there's money and if there's motivation, then you know that pretty much everything that you know is traditional security can be circumvented. Now, this is a concept here I want you to understand because it leads me to the next level. In this discussion this week, because tomorrow, for instance, we're probably going to concentrate the entire show on the intelligence department and who is who, where is where, and what is happening. Because the consolidation of power on that level is a double-edged sword, to be sure. But for tonight, as we're thinking about things security-wise, put this in the back of your brain somewhere and think about it. if we as individuals have, let's say, our Second Amendment rights so that we can have guns, so that we can protect ourselves, well, that makes good sense, particularly in an older American sense. It's invaluable. It's the sort of thing where in your daily encounters in the original America, having those weapons was your bread and butter. I mean, not only did you eat from it, but you protected yourself from bandits and from varmints, from all kinds of dangerous things one way or another. It was something that was really invaluable, so much so that it was written into the Constitution. Now, in the 21st century, that concept is expanding. And one of the things that it has to include, which I want you to think about here, is information. Now, which is more important, a gun or information? Now, we know that they're both very, very important. We know that the history of the country has actually hinged on both. But as we go into an age where information changes faster and faster and faster, which becomes more important, the gun or the information? For instance, you may have a very, very, very good lock, but if you don't have the combination, the lock does you no good. If you don't have the key and you can't open it, the lock won't work for you. It's a failed machine. Now, let's expand that into the world that we live in now, a world of computer code. Why were there failings in the intelligence department in the decade that led up to 9/11? Well, largely in the same respect that why older people initially had trouble setting VCRs, and why now there is a real rift, a technology rift, between older people and younger people. That the people who were involved in gathering intelligence in the United States were really working with the tools that had served them well over many, 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 many years. Kind of like a graphic artist. Kind of like a recording engineer. Now, in this modern world, computers change at a rate faster than any of those people had ever seen in their lives, or even their parents or their parents' lives. It's like a time compression. Information becomes more and more important. It turns out that if our intelligence community had spent more time working with the people who worked on the internet, let's say working closer to the people who were making search engines, were making intelligent means of processing data. Well, you know, the underestimation of the internet was Bill Gates' problem as well. It certainly is something that has to be factored in. Information is the gun of the 21st century. Now, as I was saying before, and I will say again, the telephone number here, 412-371-5054. We're coming up on a break in just about a minute's time. The email address, think@worldmicroscope.com. T-H-I-N-K @worldmicroscope.com. You can also go to worldmicroscope.com, and there is and will be an ever-growing collection of information. There will be actually interactive chat and a blog that will work with the show so that we can get to know each other and make this classroom really work. Tonight, we're working on an overview of security and how it affects each and every one of us in ways that we hardly even imagine. Every time we use that bank card, every time we use a telephone, every time we drive our cars, every time we use the Easy Pass or go to the store. You are listening to World Microscope on the Think Radio Network. We'll be back in just a few moments.
Monticello, Maine, the United States of America.
You've played music. You've played movies.
Oh, Margaret, is it really you?
But have you ever played Sense? That's right, Sense. Introducing Sense Stories, a whole new way to play Sense. Just put a Sense Stories disc in the Sense Stories player. Push play and enjoy. Every Sense Stories disc plays five amazing scents, one after the other. Sense Stories by Febreze. Push play and you're there.
French Vanilla Cool Whip.
French Vanilla's here for that special time of year. To the Cool Whip. Happy holidays, just a dollop away. To the Cool Whip.
Feed someone who is hungry, and you will feel full. Give a child a reason to dream, and you will feel at peace. Help a teen reclaim his youth, and you will feel years younger. When you help the Salvation Army, everybody feels better. Donate online at SalvationArmyUSA.org.
We're back on the Think Radio Network. This is Michael Ketter, host of World Microscope, and that is exactly where you've landed. Well, for the next 10 minutes or so, let's talk about a number of things that have to do with security. One of them is the obvious. If the United States is to function, and it's to function efficiently, one of the things that it needs is a military. After all, we are essentially a superpower. At least we were, as was Russia. I mean, the definitions, by the way, so that you can understand how they work. The first world was the United States. The second world was the Soviet Union. The third world was the world not associated with either one. That's where those terms came from. They're 1960s Cold War terms. But let's look at the military, and let's look at the reality of what we're seeing as far as security and the military goes. First of all, we are quite overextended. It's a sad thing because throughout the 1990s, the military got smaller and smaller, and basically was trying to change with the times, becoming more efficient, and in many cases replacing technology and doing things along those lines. But the bottom line is, the bottom basically was cut out of the military beginning with Reagan's era. And it wasn't that it was cut out of the military then, it was cut out of the traditional military. We went into Star Wars research. And that, at that time, for those who don't remember, quadrupled the debt. So that was actually the record for the amount of money spent during an administration, right up until G.W. Bush, twice in a row, actually had the same honor bestowed upon him. But looking at the military right now, they're not getting the supplies that they need when they should. One of the biggest problems has been water. And that's a very basic one in a desert, and I can see where that would be a problem. Another one would be armor, just simple body armor, things of that nature, where it's slow in coming, and that can be, again, a real problem. Another one would be military transport vehicles, things like the Hummers that are Hummers but not armor-plated. Those are equally dangerous to any number of other military vehicles that are not armor-plated. So we have a problem with getting basic materiel to the soldiers, and we also don't have ample replacements to keep the existing system with where we're extended right now and all over the world, but especially right now in Afghanistan and in Iraq. Now, they say there will be no draft, but so far now in 7 states there have been rules added to the state laws that say that when you're 15 years old and when you're applying for a learner's permit, you have to register for selective service at that time. Now, they say there won't be a draft, but when you're 15 years old and you're going to get a learner's permit, you have to register for select service. So, you see, again, it's a question of what you want to believe information-wise. If the president says there will not be a draft, you can believe that. But when they start asking for selective service information, you know that that's what is intended. This is one of these facts of life things. Like, you know, I'm sorry, your doggy got run over, but this is what happens. Well, this is like that. Now, as far as security per se and the military in the United States, the primary function of the National Guard is to defend the territorial United States of the America. The United States of the America. You see, one of these days I will actually learn all the Bushisms, and we will have them on one show where we can say them all in one big row. But you get my point, though. The National Guard's supposed to be here. They're not supposed to be away. If something bad were to happen here, we would be at a loss because a lot of our soldiers are away. And when you think about it also, who protects this land when the soldiers aren't there protecting us? Well, our policemen, our firemen, the people who work as paramedics, the people who tend to be in those fields are also the same people who are our National Guard. So, essentially, by having the war arranged the way it is, where the National Guard is largely in Iraq, we've taken our defenses and depleted not only the military that's supposed to defend us, but the civilians in our communities who are part of that military as well. So it's a double punch. Now, again, these are these things that are kind of hard to avoid, regardless of how you may feel about the purpose of the war in Iraq. The fact that we can't protect ourselves right now makes me feel vulnerable. The fact that the ports are wide open and that ships were coming and going without being inspected, that is unthinkable. When you consider that they will actually search your underwear in an airport to protect 300 people, but they will not protect the entire, let's say if you're in San Francisco, or if you're in New York, or if you're in Atlanta, or if you're somewhere, let's say, you know, imagine what a giant cruise ship filled with explosives might do. I mean, that's obviously an absurd thing, but you get my point. Now, when you talk about the borders with Mexico and with Canada, again, as a logistic issue of security, you have to understand, essentially, these people are allies. They are our friends. The people in Canada are not coming down and blowing us up. Neither are the people from Mexico coming up and blowing us up. They may be different than us, and there may be differences of opinion on many levels, but when push comes to shove, they're on our side. So what we need to do is make sure that as allies, especially at this time where, for instance, you have George Bush, they're very thoughtfully up in Canada mending fences, and it's not likely that many people are going to be very sympathetic to him. Now, again, in understanding this from an analytical point of view, because I know that American talk radio was littered with it today, the fact that it costs so much to do things in Canada. Well, let's look at two very stunning facts that should put this in perspective for you. One, it is the second largest country in the world. Two, there are only 30 million people there. So, in other words, if you were to compare it to the United States in terms of a tax base, we have 10 times the tax base that the Canadians do what they do. Now, mind you, they have a tenth of the people that we do, but they are the second largest country in the world. An awful lot of resources. And in general, as I said before, they're our friends. So when it comes to security, try to think a little bit more progressively. We've got personal, national, and global. Those are three basic categories. We've got offensive and defensive securities. You know, are we going to start a war with a country we feel will hurt us, as we did with Iraq? Or are we going to defend ourselves from enemies that potentially could hurt us, as we should have done with Osama bin Laden? And there are, of course, a myriad of other views that we will be discussing as these days progress. Tomorrow's show, as I say, will be dedicated almost entirely to the reshaping of the intelligence departments and the reshaping of data transfer, so to speak, in the 21st century in the United States of America. Tom Ridge is stepping down February 2nd. His successor will become essentially an information czar, a security czar, someone who we might all very well be scared of. And there's a lot of things to discuss with that. Before I go today, there is something that is your assignment. Now, this is something that I want you to do. It might take all week to do it. But if you are serious about looking at the world for what it is, and if you're serious about understanding things, first of all, here are some basic numbers. There's about 1,300 United States soldiers that have died in Iraq. Now, that's separate from the ones in Afghanistan as well, but about 1,300 in Iraq. Now, there are over 16,000 maimed United States soldiers, soldiers that have lost arms, legs, eyes, worse. And many, many are not being counted as combat deaths because they die in other ways, in roadside accidents, poison, any number of different things that might happen, heart attacks. Now, what I want you to do is go to www.washingtonpost.com. And once you're there, click on Faces of the Fallen. And there you will find the pictures of every one of the soldiers that has died in the war in Iraq. Now, the reason I want you to look at that is that I want you to look at each and every one of those photographs. If it's possible for you, I want you to actually imagine the role that they were playing. And I want you to remember that they died to protect you. Now, I know that may seem very detached, and it's a tough assignment. 1,300 people to look at. Look them right in the eye. They died to protect you. Now, I'll give that address one more time, www.washingtonpost.com. That's the newspaper, the Washington Post. When you get there, click on Faces of the Fallen. Bookmark it. Spend some time there. Understand it. Because that is a very important aspect of war. We certainly have killed over 17,000 Iraqi soldiers now and over 100,000 civilians. Those are huge numbers, incomprehensible numbers. And these are troublesome times, but we will wrap our brains around it and we will reach a decision that will move forward without getting us all killed, with any luck. Thanks very much for being with me. Michael Ketter, here at World Microscope on the Think Radio Network. Email think@worldmicroscope.com. Take care, and I will see you tomorrow night, 9 p.m. Eastern United States time, 2 hours UTC. Take care.